Welcome to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family. Rocket can.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Let's get it started. No matter where you are, no matter where you could be, hop on in. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. I am your host extraordinaire, Cole Thompson. We got Mike Hernandez on the other side of the glass, but more importantly, man, do we have a show for you today. MLB playoffs in full swing, the return of the NBA, early previews on some of the top storylines in the NFL, and of course, I'm always going to talk about college football. I'm always going to talk about the LSU job. It's the biggest job that's opened up in college football in a hot minute, so we got to discuss that. But I start the show off today with this. You ever remember why you didn't like something, and then you get to see it, and you're like, got it, remember? So I'm going to say something very controversial on the show that a lot of people are not going to like me for, and I don't really mind it, and I respect your opinion. But Hocus Pocus is a very dumb movie. Hocus Pocus, the one from like the 1990s, the one that everyone loves from Disney Channel.
Never seen it.
It's a very dumb movie. It is a very, very, very dumb, horrible movie. My girlfriend comes home yesterday. I'm trying to be a good boyfriend. I'm watching the Dodgers and the Braves game on my iPad. She's like, can I go watch a movie? And I'm like, yeah, sure, go ahead. And I'm sitting on the couch and I'm watching Hocus Pocus. I'm like, oh, wait. I don't remember liking this movie. Maybe I'll give it another shot as I'm watching both. Halfway through, I'm like, you know what? I gave it a shot. It was fair, and now I regret it. I regret so much of my time being wasted. I regret so much of this moment happening. Like, the movie as a whole is actually not that bad, but we got to stop adding, like, Bette Midler's character, Winifred, or whatever her name is. I don't even know at this point. Is not the most cynical, annoying voice on dang television history. It's about, ooh, darling, ooh, love you. It's like, dude, no. Sometimes doing about a 7 is right around the same as doing about a 10. And sometimes 7 performances are actually A-plus grades. Sometimes doing 10 is actually a C. Bette Miller, you did way too much. The movie as a whole is already stupid. The plot is already a little bit of a dumb area. But, my God. The fact that I don't get that 95 minutes back just to watch the Dodgers-Braves game, that's on me. I apologize, Cole.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
There's two things I know about baseball. I think that most people would know as well, but definitely if you work. I think that a lot of people don't need to know all the analytics side of baseball, but I think that you need to know two things, especially if you work in this industry. Number one, it really can sometimes be a pitcher's duel, and that is arguably the best part of it. The fact that a pitcher is going toe-to-toe with every single batter, trying to win 27 different matchups, go perfect in every one, that way his team absolutely wins. That's always fun. And number two, you can always have enough runs. You can never have enough runs. Just you need to be able to score as much runs as possible. And in both instances of yesterday's games, that rings true. That rings so true because if at any given moment, a game and a momentum could shift. Don't believe me. Let's go ahead and break down the late game last night. Boston versus the likes of the Houston Astros. Houston has Zach Greinke on the mound. Meanwhile, on the flip side, it's one of the relief pitchers, Jared Pavecki, I think was his name, for the Red Sox. So it's a very clear matchup that you have your number two, number three starter going up against the relief guy. Well, Pavetti lasted 5 innings of work. He did his job absolutely brilliant. He was able to get a couple of big time strikeouts. He only allowed the home run to Alex Bregman in the first, and that was about it. Zach Greinke, on the other hand, well, things got sour. Things got sour very fast. He wasn't able to even go through 2 full innings of work, went 1.1, 3 walks, allowed the home run to Xander Bogaerts, 2 earned runs, 2 hits on the play. as well. So, you know, they got out of that. Got to give it up for Christian Javier. Kind of came in. Him and Phil Maton got through four innings of work before Kendall Graveman came in and Ryan Pressly was able to get things done. But on the flip side, Boston got a two-run home run, and it was 2-1 all the way until the eighth inning. At that point, Jose Altuve, who has struggled at times, was able to get it up to 2-2. Now, the fun part. There were multiple occasions, I believe in five out of the six innings that before Altuve scored a run. Neither team crossed one. I think the Red Sox had a runner in scoring position in every single inning, if I'm not mistaken. Every single inning, they had a shot to drive in a run. Guess what? They got jammed. They got out of it. Somehow, Houston was able to move it up. And why is this important? Because, holy crap, the ninth inning from the Astros, their ability to find ways to hit with runners in scoring position, their ways to be disciplined at the plate against Nathan Eovaldi to make sure that they were set for only to happen for a... Sorry about that. For a Michael Brantley bases clearing three-run double following a single from Jason Castro that scored Carlos Correa. To be able to get that, a Brantley double to make it 6-2, automatically swung momentum in favor of Houston. They could have tried out any single pitcher. They would have had some insurance. Now what happens even more? Well, guess what? Correa comes up to the plate after a Yordan Alvarez single to score Brantley. He knocks in another run. After him, Kyle Tucker comes in. He singles up the middle right past second base. He singles in a run. Now it's 9-2. Now you have a 7-run lead with three outs remaining. 1, 2, 3. Houston wins 9-2. When you have runners in scoring position, it always struggles because if you can always get a few hits, don't get me wrong, you can get a few hits in an inning. You can have, you know, back-to-back singles, but you need to be able to get that runner into home. Once they're on second, you need to be able to find a way to get a runner in home. Yeah, sure, maybe you don't get every single run in. Maybe you don't have a 6, 7, 8-run inning. But if you consistently are chipping away at that lead, if you consistently are finding ways to promote yourself, to extend your horizon just a little bit, it gives you some momentum. It gives you some leisure. Boston was unable to get that. Boston was unable to find any leisure. And then as soon as Jose Altuve was able to get his home run in the eighth inning, momentum kind of shifted. Momentum kind of moved in favor of the Astros. And what was the best part was they were going to go through their entire lineup one more time. And if all else failed, all they had to do was trust that their pitching staff of Graveman and Pressly was going to get them to the 10th inning to get back up there and get another shot at playing. The fact that they were able to get 7 runs in the top of the 9th inning, 7 runs to make sure they had some insurance. If any one of their pitchers, if Pressly, if Yimi Garcia, if I'm blanking on the other guy's name, if any one of them could come in and just blow it by, you know, giving up a 2-run shot, giving up maybe a bases clearing triple, they still had some time to play. They still had some insurance. Insurance runs are so important because if you never know how the game is going to swing. And I know that because all we got to do is look down in Atlanta. We got to look at Los Angeles. Dodgers. I mean, you watch Charlie Morton in the first inning. Struggle. 3 walks. Gives up a 2-run homer to Corey Seager. Early lead Los Angeles in Dodger Stadium. With a crowd behind them chanting on L.A. Blue and saying boo to the Braves. That was exactly the scene. But Charlie Morton, like a boxer who gets his keister whooped in the first round by a heavyweight champ, but is able to exhaust all of his energy, comes back to work, gets 4 innings of solid pitching done, is able to keep his team afloat because of really good situational hitting from guys like Adam Duvall, from guys like Jock Peterson. They're able to go ahead and move the ball. They're able to go ahead and set themselves up to make it 5-2. 5-2. Really, really good fourth inning. Get 4 runs. Been able to get some insurance in the fifth from Adam Duvall from a single to center to score Ozzie Albies. They're able to go ahead and have some situational play. But then afterwards, kind of went silent. Sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning goes by. You're unable to move the ball. You're unable to hit completely. I think they only got, maybe one hit, two hits. Yeah, one or two or something like that. They struggled. They struggled moving the ball. They struggled finding anything. And then bottom of the eighth, you get a Will Smith single. You get a A.J. Pollock single to get Will Smith in scoring play. And here comes Cody Bellinger. Guy struggled all season. Guy was inconsistent, both in center field. Guy was inconsistent when he played first base. Didn't matter. This is why you pay the big dollars. This is what you look at when a guy like Cody Bellinger is about to get ready to hit free agency. He wants to get paid. He's giving you a reason why you got to pay him. Three-run shot, tie game. The inning before, you get a single from Freddie Freeman, a double play from Ozzie Albies, and an Austin Riley strikeout. In a split second, after all these guys were the heroes of the past few weeks, Freddie Freeman, big-time hero in game three of the NLDS. Eddie Rosario, the superstar hero of game one. Ozzie Albies, one of the young core members. Austin Riley, the hero of game one, gets the game-winning single. Well, you struggled. And in baseball, it's one of those sports where it's not a, what have you done for me for a while? What have you done for me lately? And when I mean lately, I mean, what did you do the last at-bat lately? Did you hit a home run or did you strike out? All it took was a swing of the bat and two really good at-plate appearances against a very undervalued pitcher to solidify that they were going to be in place, that they were going to be able to take the lead. And then what happened? Well, after that, you get a double from Mookie Betts. There you go. Get the lead. Kenley Jansen comes in. Strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. Folks, I don't know if in both situations, if you look at this, top to bottom, from both teams, I don't know if this means that the Astros have the momentum. I don't know if this means the Braves have the momentum. What I do know is, you need runs. The fact that the Astros were able to consistently put points on the board and score some runs is so huge. But on the flip side, when you look at the Braves, the fact that they were unable to play consistent enough, I would much rather have, instead of a big-time inning, run every single inning, run every single play to make it 8, 9, 10, 1 and 2, just every single inning, to be able to break out. That way I continue to keep my lead. I would much rather that than anything else. Now, it's all about pitching. Now, the Dodgers may have an advantage because they did not have to worry about, because now that Walker Buehler's out, they got to take down Charlie Morton. Now they're going up against the reliever for Atlanta. And on the flip side, for Houston, they have an opportunity to now knock out the Red Sox and take the lead, because keep in mind, Nathan Eovaldi's off the mound. He ain't pitching. Need runs. Just keep that in mind. You always need runs. Speaking of runs, the Philadelphia 76ers are having Ben Simmons run himself out of town. Would I take him on if I was an NBA GM? We'll talk about that next right here on Just Saying It.
This is Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up your parts for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. Or you can have them choose to deliver your parts right to your front door on free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts and visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices, every day. So, attitude in life can get you so far. There's a lot of times where I've watched people lose jobs or lose opportunities because of the way that their attitude is, the way that they look at the world, the way that they act around people. And honestly, if I was anyone else out there who does not believe this, I would just say, plain and simple, you're wrong. Ben Simmons has played himself out of going where he wants to go. He has played himself out of the fact that he is no longer in control of where his career heads next. Because if even if you are trying to be on the trade block, you're trying to send a message, you're trying to get out, you're trying to make sure that it is your team, that you are the one in control, you have to do it properly. You have to do it at a proper level. And you are handling this whole thing right now out with the Philadelphia 76ers in a bad, bad, bad light. Like, you are not helping your case whatsoever. And for everybody who forgets this, he was suspended for the season opener after he spat in practice. Now, here's exactly what happened, according to what the reports were. He was sitting around. Doc Rivers asked him to go ahead and participate in some drills. And he goes, nope, not going to do that. After that, they start running some defensive drills. And when he's running the drills, again, Doc Rivers comes over, asks him again to go ahead and do it, tells him, stop dribbling, and why don't you go home? Drop the ball, and immediately walks out of there. Immediately wants out. They told him to go home. They told him to get out. And now they have to decide on if he's going to be able to play for the remainder of the season. So I'll do this right now. He's suspended for one game. That's fine. Philadelphia is going to do everything that they can to trade him. I wouldn't play him. Plain and simple. I would not play him. Because of anything that I do now is if I play him, I risk losing him to injury. I risk him getting hurt, and I risk him adding a little bit more fuel to the fire. The way that your attitude speaks of yourself, dude, is a whole different level. Because of what you're doing is not only telling the team that you like, or the team that drafted you, that's a better one, hey, man, I don't want to be here, so I'm going to act like a child and give you a temper tantrum until I get my way. Kind of like what a two-year-old does every single time they see a toy, they see a treat that they don't really want, and a parent just buys it for them to shut up. The difference is that everybody is an adult in the room. Everybody, including you. The other difference is that everybody knows how to act like an adult in the room, except for you. And now Daryl Morey and now Doc Rivers have the opportunity to try and move you to get something back in return. And if I'm them, I would do that. I would do everything in my power to make sure that I get at least one little bit of thing back in return. Maybe two bench players, maybe a low-end starter, maybe another offensive name that they could add just to provide some stability to the backcourt. Maybe they do that. Maybe they try to add a big man in the front court. I don't know. What I do know is that when you have your teammates basically saying, nope, not my problem, not my business, they're fed up too. They're fed up. And this is a team in Philadelphia that probably is not going to win the whole thing. I would say right now, you see Brooklyn, you see maybe Miami, you see maybe the way Milwaukee plays, how they look for the entire season. Those are your favorites, at least in the Eastern Conference. But they're not a bad team. They're not a bad team. And they could probably win with Joel Embiid, and they could probably win with Tobias Harris, and they could probably win with a few of those other names. They could easily, I would say, have an opportunity to win and win out. But the Ben Simmons thing is done. More so, I really wouldn't care what I would send Ben Simmons. In fact, I would probably send him to a crappy team to send him a message. You do not mess with us. You do not mess with me. And you do not embarrass us in any way, shape, or form. The fact that you think that this is the right way to act in a situation shows all I need to know about you. Shows all I need to know about your character. Shows all I need to know about your wit, what you mean to the team, and more so, how valuable you are to our franchise. Philadelphia 76ers don't want that. They don't need that. They want to show that they can win, and they're trying to move off of him. It just is a really crappy contract for a defensive-first player who does not offer anything from shooting and can't move the ball offensively. Sorry, it's just that. And the fact that you want to act this way, well, I would 100% just take whatever I could get if I'm now Philadelphia, and I'm not sure I'm offering much if I'm another team. Childish behavior like that can go so far in life. Guess what? It goes zero places for me, even if you are a very talented defensive player, because I'm not going to call you a superstar when you act like a super, total, clueless child on and off the court. So, a quarterback that I'll be interested to see happen to his career after the season is Derek Carr. I think by now most of you know that I have a huge affluation for Derek Carr and the way that he plays the game and how successful he's been on the field despite his limitations. He's on his fifth head coach since being drafted out of Fresno State. Across his career, he has been belittled and put on trade rumors from not just the likes of ownership, not just the likes of fans, but also from his own coach, his most recent coach. Oh, you know, we're not looking to trade him, but you know, you can never say never to anything in life. Well, I think I would feel on that. Oh, and by the way, I've been one of the more consistent quality players for this organization since coming out back in 2014. What are we on? Three straight seasons of 4,000 passing yards? What are we looking at? A fourth? Second or third probably when it comes to passing yards on the season. Maybe I lead the league in QBR. Maybe I have one of the more efficient completion ratings. Maybe one of the highest passer ratings for a single season. Am I going to do that and then just still be on a team that possibly goes 7-10, maybe 6-11, or maybe even worse? Is that what I'm looking at? No. You got to remember that when John Gruden was fired, everyone else was kind of put on the chopping block. Everyone else was kind of given a warning. Hey, not saying anything, but you may want to start looking and firing up that resume. You may want to just have another look at something before it's too late. Because the last thing you really want to do is not be prepared for another head coach to come in and not bring you around. Mark Davis has the opportunity to clean house completely and set himself up for a very, very, very nice rebuild. He has an opportunity to do that. We all know that Mike Mayock was brought in to be the voice for John Gruden as the GM. He controlled that team. Rick Bisaccia, as much as you like him, as great as that was that he got a win, keep in mind, he has been around John Gruden for a majority of his career. The two worked together on their Super Bowl run in Tampa Bay. He was brought in as the special teams coordinator when Gruden was brought in as the head coach. I don't think he's got it. I think that Mark Davis wants a clean house. He wants to be completely set. So they're going to bring in a new GM. They're going to bring in a new head coach. And that means I would not be shocked to see a Matthew Stafford 2.0. At some point, you have to give in. You can only be so loyal and so respectful to an organization as long as they respect you. And right now, the Raiders, I don't know if they respect Derek Carr. Now, keep in mind, they've only been to the playoffs once since he's been there. Now, they may have won that game against the Houston Texans if he wasn't hurt. Remember, he did not play in that game. They had to go to their backup quarterback for that game. Both teams, I think, were going to their backup quarterback back in 2016-2017 season. So he doesn't have all control on who they bring in as the next head coach, who he brings in as the next GM. He doesn't have that power. But the loyalty and the way he's been so true and acted as a leader for the organization is very Matthew Stafford-esque. Great numbers, quality production, every single season, looks to be one of the top-tier quarterbacks in all numbers and ratings and previews, plays on a very bad team. Plays on a team that does not have a direction just yet. New GM comes in, new head coach comes in, they want their quarterback. They want their future guy. And more so, keep in mind that there's going to be some options on free agency. Aaron Rodgers, is he for sure going back to Green Bay, or would he be interested in maybe going to Just Win Baby? Would he be interested? And most people would consider that an upgrade. But instead, if you look at it, if he goes to the AFC and you put Derek Carr in the NFC, where's he rank among quarterbacks? Second? Third? In the conference? And then in such a quarterback-driven league, to be successful, you need to have the right guy commanding your offense? You know what he is right now in the AFC? Sixth, seventh, ninth best quarterback? He would immediately, if going to a team like the Washington football team that has pieces in place to be very successful, he'd be like Matthew Stafford, probably leading his team all the way to a division title. And if not a division title, at least a playoff appearance. And then once they get in the playoffs, probably have an opportunity to win. Derek Carr has been the most loyal, undervalued quarterback in the NFL. It's time for him to get some respect. Let's
go! Just Saying It continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Time to find out what Cole's buying.
You bought it.
That's right, I bought it.
And selling.
Sell.
In the world of sports.
Well, what are we waiting for?
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson with Buy or Sell.
So I would say about every single year, there's about maybe 12 front runners for the NFL MVP. I would go with probably 12. There's always one wild card, one superstar, like one elite superstar, a bunch of up-and-coming names, and maybe a one-year wonder kind of guy. But we're at that point. We're about a third of the way through the season. We know that probably one of these 12 names is going to win the award. So I'm going to go ahead and play buy or sell. Which ones I actually believe can fight their way forward into putting themselves in the category of winning it all or not at all. Not even a little bit. They're just a hot name. Let's go. Here we go.
Dak Prescott.
Ooh, buy. Buy. I will 100% buy that. Right now, Dallas, I believe, is actually leading the NFL in yards per play. And I'm like 95% positive on that they are leading the NFL in not just like passing yards, but yards per play. They are at 5.2. They also have the number one offense in the league. They also have one of the more dominant run offenses in the league, which I did not expect to see coming. They're number two, only behind the best 1-2 combination in the NFL of Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb. And they're averaging 34.2 points a game. That is something that I don't think enough people are talking about. And that's all based off of Dak, who is having a clean season, a turnover-less season, very much so. I get it, he had one last week against New England, but having a very turnover-less year and is connecting with a bunch of different names. I mean, we're talking not just your CeeDee Lambs and Amari Coopers, but your Cedric Wilson's having a good year, and both tight ends are having a pretty good year, and Tony Pollard's having a great year out of the backfield. There is a lot to like about Dallas, but it all starts up front with Dak Prescott. He is easily, and then if the season were to end today, he would actually have my vote. If I would immediately actually vote him in as the MVP.
Josh Allen.
Buy, 100% buy. Because of, again, you look at how he is utilized in this offense. He is the guy that you got to watch. Like the game on the game on Monday night was not his fault. The game on Monday night, he did not have a bad game. He actually had a very, very, very good game. You know, I know he had the interception, kind of a bad throw, but he had a 74.5 completion rating. He had a passer rating of over 107, three touchdowns, one interception, over 350 yards. That marks the 1, 2, 3, 4th game of fourth game of the year of over 300 yards passing, and he's only had one game this year. So his other five games are multi-touchdown games. Guy is absolutely crushing it. He's in top five in every single category except for passing yards. He ranks just outside of there, but he is absolutely having a stellar year, limiting the turnovers. He can easily win the MVP.
Derek Carr.
I saw that one. I do it, and it hurts me. It does because, I just did a whole rant on Derek Carr. I love Derek Carr. I'll be completely honest with you. Josh Allen's my favorite quarterback right now in the NFL. Derek Carr is a pretty close second just based off his level of consistency. I mean, when you look at his numbers across the board, he's ranked inside the top 10 in every single category except for QBR. And what I really find interesting is that this season, he's really stepped up his deep ball game. He's really done a good job at that. He's averaging 8.4 yards right now per throw. And he has still a stellar QBR rating of 59.9. He has a passer rating. If he continues this up, he'll have three straight years of over 100 in the passer rating aspect. He's going on four straight years of 4,000 passing yards. Guy can really do it, but I just see them cooling down. I just see, slowly but surely, Las Vegas coming back to life. And that probably means there's going to be a few games where he has some mishaps, he has some mistakes, and he's not having 350-yard games. He's probably having more like 222, 231, 243. You don't win the MVP with those kind of numbers.
Tom Brady.
I buy. I do buy, but I will say, I think that we're kind of talking about him a little bit overhyped. They haven't really played anybody. Like, that's the biggest thing for me. Tom has not really played a really good defense, except for maybe New England, and you can make a valid argument that they're not even that good. I mean, Philadelphia, Miami's struggling right now. Like, they're having a really tough time. The Rams are very inconsistent. Atlanta, Dallas, all these teams. They're not good defenses. I want to see him go up against really strong defensive play. And you look at some of their games coming up. The Bears, they're not terrible. The Saints, they're pretty decent. Washington was on paper supposed to be good. They're not. The Colts aren't bad. If he can put up these kind of numbers, I would 100% say, oh yeah, he's still a front runner. But I want to see him do it against good defenses. Once I see that, I'll be feeling a lot more comfortable putting him in that category.
Justin Herbert.
I sell. I do. I don't know why. I look at his numbers, and trust me, I am a huge Justin Herbert fan. I think that he is absolutely crushing it. But you can't have, you know, terrible games every single week. You know, he's very much still trying to find his rhythm. Back-to-back 300-yard passing games, now 222 the next game. Another 300-yard passing game, next game. Averages a season-low 56.3% of a completion rating. Averages a low passer rating of 67. Doesn't have a QBR of over 18. Little things like that go a long way. And, you know, I don't think that it's his fault. You know, I do think that there's sometimes the offensive line plays a factor. You know, drop passes play a role, all that. But Herbert, to me, is probably a year away from being in that MVP category like we saw, what was it, last season with Josh Allen. Really starting to show the league how special he can be for the future. And then the next year, break out, get a contract extension. I would likely put him in the MVP category for next season rather than this year after what I've seen so far.
Lamar Jackson.
Oh, dude. I mean, buy the crap out of that stock. He's on pace right now to have a career best in passing yards, have three straight seasons of 1,000-yard rushing, 1,000-yard passing, lead the team and set a record for passing touchdowns, a highest rating of a QBR, highest rating of a completion rating, and a highest rating of a passer rating. The highest record in all of those aspects, the highest that he's had in his career. And you're going to say, oh, well, you know, because of he one time has a 223-yard passing game with three touchdowns and no turnovers, that's not enough. But if he has a 400-yard passing game with five touchdowns, oh, yeah, that's it. Just because, again, if we're talking about most valuable player, what Lamar's doing right now in Baltimore speaks volumes, 100%, for him being the most valuable player. Every single time number eight touches the ball, whether it be as a runner, whether it be as a passer, whether it be as him just playing kind of, you know, lollygag behind the line of scrimmage, making defenders miss, juking, driving, and hopping and hollowing all his way up to a touchdown. When you look at all that, he's the best player. He's the best player on the field. Isn't that what the MVP is all about? MVP, most valuable player. There's nobody more valuable to their offense right now than Lamar.
Aaron Rodgers.
I sell that. I do. I think that Aaron's having a really good year. I mean, a really, really good year. But it's not that same level as you saw kind of last year. You know, 12 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. I will say he's moving the ball consistently. But what's really interesting is that he does not have that many games over 300 yards passing. He doesn't. He had 195 last week, and he only has one 300-plus yard game. And it came in an overtime victory over the Cincinnati Bengals. So he got some extra minutes to be able to, you know, clog and add a little bit more comfort to that number. And I'm not saying that that's not good. I'm saying that if you look top to bottom at what voters are looking for, they want production. Aaron Rodgers right now is a consistent quarterback. He's a very stellar quarterback. He's a very stable option. But if you go from top to bottom, he is not playing like an MVP like he was last season. So, no, I take him out of the category.
Derrick Henry.
Bye. And this is the one I'm talking about. Like, there's always one random one. There's always one that kind of sits out there. Derrick Henry leads the NFL in rushing by, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, over 142 yards. That's the nearest next rusher in Nick Chubb. He is on pace to rush for over 2,000 yards for the second time in NFL history. I do not believe, I'm trying to look it up, maybe Michael can, the last time there was a back-to-back 2,000-yard rusher in the NFL. I honestly don't think that there is. I honestly don't think that that's ever happened because of, again, they just don't utilize them. They don't utilize running backs like that. Henry, kind of like Lamar Jackson, is in that exact same category, that exact same role. Doesn't matter if you're a running back, if you're a wide receiver, if you're a quarterback, and you're, you know, and if you're not a elite passer, If you are the offense, if you're the guy who you absolutely is the driving force, the catalyst, and the centerpiece, and the nucleus of your team, you are the most valuable player on your roster. And if you're not just the most valuable player on your roster, you may be the most valuable player in the NFL. There is nobody who is utilized more to their enhanced skills than Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry. They're two very different players, but both of them have absolutely crushed it. And when you look at what Todd Downing's done in Atlanta to take over for Arthur Smith, and in Tennessee to take over for Arthur Smith, my bad, what he's been able to do is absolutely astonishing. They have not missed a beat running the football, and that's in large part due to a 250-pound running back. He absolutely is an MVP contender.
And there's no back-to-back 2,000-yard
rush. And there's a very good shot that if he continues the way that he's playing, he's going to become the very first player. If that's the case, I mean, that has to be your MVP.
Trevon Diggs.
Ooh. Now, I say sell only because if it's an offensive-driven award, but he would at least be getting some votes, in my opinion. The fact that he right now is on pace to have, I think, 18 interceptions, four more than Night Train Lane, who has the record right now at 14, is astounding. Now, eventually he is going to cool off, but still, you're at 7 interceptions in 6 games. You have a coverage rating by Pro Football Focus in man that ranks number 1 among all cornerbacks. You are, on top of that, forcing wide receivers to be limited out of place. He is absolutely having a crazy, ridiculous type year, and you got to give it up for him. But it's defensive award. You have to be setting a lot of records, and I mean not just, 14 tying Lane Train. You need to have 18, 19, 21 interceptions in a season. If he does that, yeah, there is no more player valuable. But until then, it's a sell.
Matthew Stafford.
I buy. I do. You know, when you look at how he's utilized in Sean McVay's offense and when you look at how he's been able to adapt and how he's been able to grow and develop into a passer, I think a lot of people are going to put him in that category. And more so, it's a good storyline because everyone knows that he was putting up high production, high frequent numbers during his time in Detroit. And then, unfortunately, his team never built around him. His team was never willing to spend money. His team was never willing to go and add the right pieces and protect him, especially on the defensive side of the football. That's a big key. So now that you add him into a Sean McVay system that has a pretty good defense and has a very solidified offense and an offense that only improved with you joining it, it's very hard for me to say that you're not in that category. It's very hard for me to not put you in that one.
Patrick Mahomes.
I sell. Dude, he leads the NFL in passing touchdowns. He leads the NFL in interceptions. Like, a lot of people kind of forget about that. He has been a turnover-prone machine this year, and a lot of it isn't on him, but he still is a turnover machine. 18 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. I get it. He has a QBR rating of 7.2, and he ranks top 3 in passing yards. But you have got to cut down on the turnovers. You're almost at 10 interceptions, which would be a brand new record. In fact, I already believe he's thrown more interceptions in the first 6 games of his season than he has his entire 2000 and his MVP year in 2018. But he's on pace to have 20 interceptions on the year. Yeah, he's also on pace to have 45 touchdowns, but 20 interceptions? No. There's no way you're getting there's no way you're getting an MVP with any more than, I would say, 15 interceptions on the season.
And Kyler Murray.
Yeah, you can make a valid argument that he already has the MVP. I mean, he doesn't have my MVP vote. That would go to Dak, but you could argue that he's pretty much locked it up. He is absolutely the catalyst for this offense, and everything kind of goes through him. And it's really interesting to see how Cliff Kingsbury wanted a few years ago to get Kyler Murray to come play for him at Texas Tech, wasn't able to get that done. Now he has him in Arizona, and the two are clicking. I mean, it's very clear to see that if he would have, if the two of them were to combine, it would have been very scary. It would have been one of those things that, I think that you would have seen him put up such ridiculous numbers on the football field. That probably would have kept Cliff Kingsbury employed. Instead, goes to the NFL. The two are absolutely a match made in heaven. He's leading the NFL in touchdown passes, and I think he's like number 2 in passing yards. So you gotta like that. They have it. Buy or sell MVP edition right here on Just Saying It.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Cole Thompson.
Well, the NBA season kicked off last night with a bang, and let's be real. You know what you saw? Milwaukee's not missing a beat. Milwaukee is still the exact same team. They're not going to have a championship hangover after everything you saw. You know, everyone was kind of talking about, were they going to slip back? Were you going to see another team step up? Was it going to be the Brooklyn Nets? Was it maybe going to be the Miami Heat? Who was going to have a good run? Chicago, you know, they're in the conversation of at least as a playoff team. Would Milwaukee not be that good? Nah, they crushed it. Absolutely stellar game across the board. They were 48 of 105 from the field goal range. They made 45% of their shots. They were really stand out at the three-point line. They did a really good job at the free throw line as well, averaging a 77.8% rate. They out-rebounded, outscored, had more assists, and fewer turnovers than the likes of the Brooklyn Nets on the way to a 127-104 win. Giannis leading the way with 32 points off of 40 minutes of play. Guy absolutely crushed it. Milwaukee's still a good team. Now, don't get me wrong, you had a really good double-double for the likes of Kevin Durant. You had a really good secondary performance from the likes of James Harden. They did their part. But there is a level, I think, that when you look at Brooklyn, they still need somebody to join them along with Kyrie Irving. Having Kyrie out due to the weight of, you know, his COVID vaccine mandate is probably going to hurt them. Milwaukee, they're going to be able to walk their way deep into the postseason.